I think it's time for She-Ra.
For the honor of Grayskull!
Hello, this is Optimus Solo, and welcome to the 69th chapter in our Powers of Grayskull series with me. I'm trying to figure out which character did that. With me for this journey into the Masters of the Universe franchise is, of course, as you just heard, TFG1 Mike. Hello.
Hello.
And are you... Oh, I get it. I finally got it. Okay.
Episode 69.
Yes. Delay here. I'm an old man. Are you ready for more mystery?
I'm older than you by a year.
Yes. But this is also, this marks our first episode into the post-season one episodes of She-Ra. So into season two and beyond. So are you ready for more Mists of Etheria on a new season now?
Yeah, I am. And I'm really surprised with the three episodes we have today because... I think all three of them either have debuting or returning characters, which is interesting and fun.
Yeah.
And, what's her name? Bluebell. I don't know.
Pika Blue?
Yeah, there you go. Pika Blue. She could almost be a stripper when she was tied up in one of those scenes. I grabbed an image of it. I'll have to show you later. But yeah. Anyway.
Yeah, that's what, like I said last episode we recorded. It is usually interesting when you venture into a future season of a show because a lot of times you'll get new introductions of characters and like we had talked about before, there's a lot of characters that we hadn't seen yet that I was expecting to already have seen. So I was interested to see if they would all show up here in these later seasons. So in this specific episode of Mists of Etheria, we'll be giving you our thoughts on episode 66 of the series, One to Count On, episode 67, Return of the General, which general, you'll have to wait and find out, and episode 68, Out of the Cocoon. That sounds like a horror film from the 80s. So we hope you're ready, because it's time to go back to Etheria.
The fly, the fly!
Don't you fret, Princess. Just two more diamonds to set.
And we can return Queen Angela's crown to the safety of Whispering Woods.
Keep a sharp eye open for trouble.
You bet!
Hordak would love to get his hands on that crystal crown.
Ready?
Don't you ladies worry. With Bo around, both you and the crown are perfectly safe.
Next, you'll be telling us you freed the kingdom of Bright Moon single-handedly.
Cowl! Now that isn't true, is it, Bo?
Well, She-Ra did help a little.
Even She-Ra won't save you this time, rebels. Freeze them! Get that crown!
No! Stay back!
Ruffians!
A lesson in good manners will slow you down.
Thanks, Bo!
We've got to save the crown.
Time to teach those troopers some appreciation for fine art.
Help, Leech! Do something!
You bunglers! These rebels will never stop the Hollowords.
All right, up first today we have episode 66, One to Count On. We'll see if this episode is one to count on or not. Now, before I get to the air date, I'm just going to throw a caveat out there for the remainder of the series because I have yet to find two sites that agree on when these episodes actually aired. Here is the best that I can surmise for everybody out there. Season 1... and season 2 and beyond are different because season 1 basically was a 65 episode standard you know, 80s cartoons type of thing. From what I can tell, when we go into season two, it becomes a one-a-week show where it was airing on, I believe, every Saturday. So
the reason why that probably is because there are only 28 episodes right. in season two. And if they had done season two, even just on the 5-day thing, it would have lasted only 2 or 3 months. It would not have lasted.
And the other thing, a lot of sites are saying that it's actually, not that you're necessarily calling it a season two, season three or whatever, but standard at that time, if you were a Saturday show, was that you aired typically for 13 episodes.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of the air dates being thrown out there are for the first 13. We still have 1986 dates in the fall of 1986. And if you remember when we were talking about season one, we were all in 1985. So the first 13, a lot of air dates tied to that in 1986. The second set of 13 or 14, however it plays out, have a lot of dates being thrown out there as 1987.
Right.
So it's possible that they stretched this out and had 13 Saturday episodes in 86 and then 13 or around there in 1987. Mm-hmm. But then certain sites have it playing on Friday and Saturday in 1986, which would have been really weird. I don't know of any show that ever did that. So the dates are kind of funny out there. The production codes obviously are different than the air dates. We're just going to go based on the most common order that is out there. So there may be times where we're going to be watching episodes that technically didn't actually air until 1987, but we're going to do them in the order that is the most accepted order, I guess, of the show. So right. the best date I can come up with for this one is that it's aired Saturday, September 13th, 1986, as the beginning of this new season. The writer was Karen Wilson and Chris Weber on this one, so we had a duo. And the plot goes something like this. When Catra steals the Crystal Crown, Bo and Glimmer decide to get it back, certain that Shira will save them if they get into trouble. Adora follows them, but makes sure to teach them to take care of themselves. So the Horde members we have in this one are Catra, Entrapta, and Leech. And the Rebellion members, we have Shira, Glimmer, Madam Raz, Bo, some of the Sprockets. I just like calling them Sprockets. The Twiggets.
The Twiggets.
Lukey, Cowl, and of course the introduction of Peekaboo.
Lukey was not in this episode.
He's in every episode.
You find him.
Yes, he's in every episode.
Well, yeah.
So what do you think about this whole idea of a plot centered around the Crystal Crown, which up to this point I didn't even know existed, which for those that aren't familiar, the Crystal Crown would be the crown of Queen Angela, Glimmer, etc., the royalty
in theory. It's essentially She-Ra's version of the Matrix of Leadership. It's a giant friggin' MacGuffin for the episode.
Yeah.
I mean,
so what do you feel really about that being the plot and kind of the characters that kind of come around that?
I mean, I like this one. I think it's an interesting episode. I like the message more than, like, I love the irony on some of these old 80s cartoons, all of them, not just She-Ra, but the ones that have the PSAs. Sometimes we'll have a lesson in the episode. We've talked about this before in He-Man. They'll have a lesson in the episode, and then at the end they'll have a PSA that is completely nonsensical or doesn't make any, you know, has no connection to the episode. And it's like, okay, so you've essentially taught us a lesson inside your 22, 23 minute without commercial, you know, 30 minute episode. What the hell is the sense of putting, other than the fact that they probably had to because of standards and practices back then, but just some of the, it's just too weird.
I mean, it is a MacGuffin episode where you do have something that's an artifact or an item that is being valued, etc. It is interesting, I guess, that they tie it back to the royal family and that it's, you know, something like that. And I like the fact that they're going to introduce new characters on both sides, I guess, to steal it or to try to get it back, etc. So the plot's nothing to write home about, but it's nothing that's going to piss me off. I'd much rather have a MacGuffin story than a child's story. For the most part.
For the most
part. At least
part.
The MacGuffins aren't annoying.
This
as far as, like, they don't talk, They don't yeah. annoy me like that. They might be annoying yeah. because it's like
they're, another... they're all inanimate objects right. that cannot speak, which is kind of funny because there are several inanimate objects in She-Ra that were able to speak, like talking trees and all that kind of stuff. But anyway, you know, I'll say this now. Probably the only kid episode ever to not piss me off is in this podcast,
right?
Which we'll talk about later. But yeah, no. We've got these three to deal with. The first three of season two. Other than ratings, I still wonder why this didn't get a full 65.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe they thought. They didn't have, yeah, I don't know if it was just ratings or if it was just a tactical thing as far as something else taking that spot, and they had an opening on a Saturday. Well, I'll have to do mm-hmm. some research on that, but we're going to take a quick break so that we can make our way to the Whispering Woods for the first time today.
Adora, I've got it! Glimmer! Now for a little extra help.
Hordak will enjoy adding this to his collection.
I wouldn't count on that, Leech.
She-Ra! No!
You boys are gonna have to do better than that.
She-Ra, I knew you'd show up to help us. You always do.
Bo, get the crown.
I'll take that, Leech.
I'll give you something you won't forget. A little present from my friend, Entraptor. You will find it very attractive.
A force cage? No, it's a magnetic field.
That's right, we are in the Whispering Woods for the first time in Season 2. Mike, what did you like about One to Count On?
I like the message of the episode, like I said before. The whole thing of, you know, yes, it is great to count on people, but you don't always have to count on them all the time. You have to, you know, you get yourself out of the messes that you get yourself into at times. There are times where everyone needs some help, but you can't always rely, you know... You know what this, not now that I'm saying this and thinking about it, you know what it reminds me of? The Bo who cried wolf. And yes, I did say that right. So, like the boy who cried wolf.
Oh, I got it. I was just...
Yeah, I know. So, you know, I like the message of the episode. The action was pretty good. The action animation in this was pretty good. And I liked the consistent changing of Adora to She-Ra and back and forth, because she couldn't stay as one or the other because of how they wanted the message to play out. And of course, we have to go to the Land of Oz, because you should pay no attention to that woman behind the curtain. Because the first time she transforms, she runs behind the goddamn curtain.
Yeah, I saw that.
You said her name earlier, Pika Blue. When I wrote down my note, I'm like, hey, look, it's Flutterby. and of course Entrapped. It was nice seeing them. I, you know, like you were saying at the beginning of the podcast, you know, seeing these characters that we knew were here, but we didn't know when they came in. You know, it was always nice to finally see them now. And what I'm going to be interested in with some of these new characters that we're going to meet along this three episode journey today is how much each of them are going to be in the remaining episodes of the series.
Right.
Because introducing new characters at the tail end of something is not, sometimes can be a good thing, but sometimes can be a bad thing. I mean, just as much as I enjoy it, just look at Rebirth. 120 new characters in 3 cartoon episodes for Transformers.
Right.
At least that's according to David Wise. What about you? What'd you like about this one?
I like quite a bit about this one. I don't know if we've already known this or not, but I guess I didn't realize the horde troopers never actually hit anybody with their guns. So I never realized what kind of bullets they were firing, but in this episode right. It does show that they freeze them.
Well, they do say that they have freeze rays, but most of the time when you see the horde troopers shooting, it's the stun beams.
Right.
It's the red stun beams, but I believe Hordak did say that they had freeze rays this time.
And I thought it was interesting that Catra, or maybe Leech, said, commented before we even see Entrapta that they got something from my friend Entrapta. So it kind of gave away that there was this other character that hopefully we would see, which we obviously did. They had the phrase, for the honor of Brightmoon.
Yeah, that just fell flat for me.
I did, like you were saying, though, I did like the Adora versus She-Ra aspect on this episode. The dependence of She-Ra, not just by Glimmer and Bo, but the dependence on She-Ra by Adora at times. That she depends on having to be She-Ra to do things. Not just that the rest of the crew depends on She-Ra for bailing him out of stuff. I didn't know Entrapta had a pet lion.
It wasn't Entrapta's, it was Catra's.
It was her she pet lion?
Yeah.
Okay.
She says it later when the lion gets captured. Oh, you've captured my kitty. Oh,
okay. I never realized there was a lion involved, so that was kind of interesting.
I never did either.
I like the idea. I think it's a cool idea of the cage mines.
Yeah.
I don't think I've seen that a ton before, but instead of mines or just traps, they were like mines that were like a bear trap of a cage almost. So that was kind of cool. Cowl even lost some fur in one of them. That was crazy. And
he got a tail trimming.
Yeah, and I like the comedic line. I don't know if they meant it as comedy or not, but She-Ra or Adora, I think She-Ra says that somebody or something is in good hands and is referring to Bo. Like, come on, we all know that's not good hands. So, I don't know, I liked the...
Oh, no, it was Cowl.
Okay.
Cowl said it. Cowl said, because Pika Blue or somebody asked about, what about Adora? And Cowl said, oh, don't worry, she's in good hands, because essentially, it was where Bo was actually carrying She-Ra.
Gotcha.
You know, the damsel in distress, you know, two arms, legs over here, breasts over there, that kind of thing. Right. So that's Cowl said that, yeah.
I will say that I think that Pika Blue was better than some of the other characters that we've seen so far.
Right.
I'm not saying I'm like jumping up and down about her or anything like that, but she didn't annoy me like some that I have seen previously that I thought I was gonna like. But so overall, I don't know. I just had fun with this episode. There's not like a lot of right home moments about it, but I like Entrapta. I like seeing Pika Blue, so I'm on board.
Cool.
What about
cool.
Freight Zone moments for you?
I only have one, and it includes almost the whole cast.
Oh, man.
The voices. Oh, my God. I don't know what it is. Maybe it's because we're almost done with this part of Powers of Grayskull series or what to do. I can't stand Catra's voice. I can't stand Leech's voice. And Trapta's voice was okay, but it wasn't stellar.
Right.
Pika Blue was all right.
I mean, the voice that work from this series is not its highlight.
I mean, but that's the thing. It should be, because you're coming from, you know...
It should be, except for you're dealing with such a small amount of people trying to do so many voices.
No,
I mean, take He-Man, for example. There was over 400 characters in He-Man over its run, and you have, like, 5 people doing those voices.
Yeah.
And not all of them are professional, what you would call professional voice actors.
I just don't think, and this is what I was saying earlier with, I don't understand why, other than ratings or whatever, that this show could, if this show had at least another 12 episodes to get it to 40 or something, what I would have liked to have seen is have, not necessarily origin episodes for each of these new characters, but Entrapta essentially does nothing. I mean... You know, yeah, she's a Horde member. Yeah, she's with Catra, but you also have Catra and Leech there. And then, like, I would have loved to have seen, like, Pika Blue versus Entrapta. And we kind of get that with her entrapping her in the flowery mist sleep thing, which that was just whatever. But it really felt more of a Catra Leech episode than really introducing a new villain. And yet they've taken steps to introduce other villains that really have nothing to do with the Horde, like the episode we'll talk about in a moment. You know, I just don't understand that. Why would you throw in so many characters, to specifically Pika Blue and Trapta, along with the other Horde members, and just bury them?
Yeah, I guess it didn't bother me as much. I can kind of see where you're coming from. The only things that I didn't like is not sword to boomerang, but why is the sword acting as a boomerang?
Oh, yeah, that was the other thing. Okay, so for those that haven't seen this yet, the episode, or for those of you that don't remember, maybe you've seen it, but it's been a long time. At the end of the episode, She-Ra goes to throw the sword to destroy the trap controls. Mm-hmm. Sword flies like it always flies in the standard Filmation animation, which is not a problem for me, the fact that it's flying like a boomerang. It lands in the thing, and instead of She-Ra walking up and pulling it out, it automatically ejects from the damn thing back into her hand. Like, it's stuck in there.
Right.
Yeah,
I did not like that at all.
Yeah, no.
And She-Ra should be too smart to, or too knowledgeable or crafty to fall for the perfume gas that she falls for. And
you know, if He-Man was here, he would have just pulled a Superman trick and just blown the gas away instead of having Cowl open up a window or a skylight.
And
what the fuck was there a skylight?
And then at one point, early on in the episode, obviously, they freeze Glimmer, who was holding the crystal crown.
Right.
Catra then, I believe it's Catra, walks up and somehow takes the crown out from this frozen block of a person.
Well, the crown was on the ground.
No, she's holding it in her hands.
Is she?
Yeah.
Okay, I'll have to go back.
She was
and
holding
it
in her hands, and she somehow is able to just randomly pick what she wants to take out of this ice without unfreezing anything or without melting anything.
Yeah, that's messed up.
So there are just some weird, wonky things like that, but they're kind of nitpicky in a way, but still stuff that I picked up on right away that I was like, I don't know about that. So,
yeah.
A couple things, but overall, more good than bad for me on this episode. So.
The more I talk about it, the...
And I don't remember what the PSA was. I'm sorry.
The PSA... Oh, God, I don't even remember either. Essentially, folks, the message of the episode of helping yourself, not always relying on somebody, is a better message than whatever the hell
loops. I think that was what the PSA was, so...
No, it wasn't. It was something else.
My bad, I didn't write it down this time.
I don't know.
All right, well... Let's gather our thoughts, and we'll come back and give you guys some awards and some ratings. Season 2, how does it start off?
Oh, my. Oh, dearie my.
All right, thanks for sticking with us. It's time to give our first ratings of Season 2, but before that, we always like to hand out some hardware. Mr. TFGO and Mike, any Horde bats or protection swords for you?
Who wrote this episode?
This was the duo.
Oh, the duo.
Karen Wilson and Chris Webber.
Okay.
Basketball player.
I've got to give them both Horde bats because they essentially, and I know this episode happened at least 30 years before what I'm going to reference, but they essentially Spider-Man 3'd this. Too many characters, not enough individual like introduction. The fact that they introduced Pika Blue and Enchantra and Trapta and didn't really even flush either one of them out at all. They just had Catra and Leech and everybody just overshadow them. This is just horrible writing. Just horrible execution.
Hmm. Yeah, I didn't see that for me. I maybe I was just happy to see new characters, but I had no problem with the non-backstory. That's how we treat most of our characters these days. Just kind of jump in and you got to catch up.
I mean, like I said in the Whispering Woods Fright Zone thing... If it was just Entrapta and her minions without Catra and Leech, it would have been fine. I would have had no problem whatsoever. You know, but since they had to throw in three villains, that's just too much.
Yeah, like I said, it didn't bother me, but I get what you're saying. For me, the only horde bet I'm going to give out is to She-Ra. And that's for falling for the perfume gas. But at the same time, I'm also going to award her a protection sword along with Adora for the back and forth that we kind of get with them in this episode. As well as protection swords, I'm going to pull a mic and I'm just giving, you know, protection sword for you and a protection sword for you. The other two are Peekaboo and Entrapta. I liked seeing them. I liked how they were done. They didn't disappoint me as much as the last couple we saw. It was Mermista and Perfuma.
Perfuma and Frosta, I think.
No, not Frosta. I like Frosta. But Mermista and Perfuma bothered me a little bit more, and I was like, I like the fact that Peekaboo didn't annoy me. So, and Entrapta, I just thought she was a cool character. So, I would like to see more. We didn't get a ton of it, but it was enough for me to pique my interest, I guess. Did you have any other protection swords or anything else?
Nah.
All right. What was your rating for the first episode of season 2?
The more and more we talked about it, the lower and lower it got. I started at a 3.5. The more and more I talked about the writing and the execution and the overall plot and the too many villains thing, it ended up at 1.5. So oh, 1.5 out of 5. Yep.
You're absolutely insane.
Oh, man.
I love how season 2 started off. This one gets a 4 out of 5 for me. I very much enjoyed the episode. It was just Entrapta and Catra and the pet lions and the cage mines and the Adora She-Ra angle. I was entertained from beginning to end. 4 out of 5. I don't know. I guess we're going to start disagreeing on season 2. We'll have to see if we agree or disagree the rest of the way out, but I like where we're starting.
Yeah.
On to episode 67. Let's go back and find which general we're talking about that's going to return.
That's Sunder. Sunder always comes back. There's only one general in the entire damn show.
No, there's been a few.
Not human generals for the Horde. There have been Force captains, but not... Anyway.
Big girl.
I am so to Daddy.
Why, so you are.
I'm happy you were able to join us, dear.
So am I, Mally. I got the fence built sooner than I expected. It holds our Bunda's cows just fine. Of course, it wouldn't stop a Horde trooper, but here in Bright Moon, I guess we don't have to worry about that much, do we?
At least this is the one place that is safe from the Horde, where we can live in peace. What's that?
Thunder. It's only thunder. I hope. Better get inside. It's like a big storm coming up. She-Ra, thank goodness you're here.
Oh, what on earth is going on? Swift Wind and I were almost hit by a missile.
It's Hordak. He's attacking Bright Moon.
He won't rest until every last inch of this planet is under his thumb.
Queen Angela managed to get a few of her royal guards here in time. But we can't hold out much longer.
That fiend. Then it's time for me to even the odds a little.
All right, let's see if TFG and Mike can return to his senses with episode 67, Return of the General, which...
That episode's lucky it didn't get a zero.
It was way better than you're giving it credit for. You even know because you started it at 3.5, which is more where it should have been. Air date of this one is Saturday, September 20th, 1986, written by Bob Forward. The evil horde attacks Brightmoon and takes its farm family's prisoner, having escaped capture. Farmer Sunder takes up his armor once more to rescue his wife and daughter with a little help from She-Ra. So we have Hordak, Mantenna, we have She-Ra, Glimmer, Bo, Queen Angela, and then we have General Sunder and his kids, as well as some random, you know,
big characters. Well, his wife and his daughter.
Sorry.
He doesn't have multiple children.
His wife and his child. Yes. What did you think of an episode where the plot is the return of this once Horde member turned Rebellion member, General Sunder?
I like it because essentially we're seeing it happen to someone else that has nothing to do with the Eternian royal family.
Mm-hmm.
It's just
or
someone
the Eternian royal family.
Huh?
Or the Eternian royal family.
No, not really. She was born on Eternia. And she was stolen to Etheria.
What are you talking about?
Randor, Marlena, Adam, and Adora. It's the Eternian royal family.
But what does this have to do with that? I'm so confused.
Secret of the Sword. She was a Force captain. Anyway, I like seeing this with another character that's exclusive to Etheria that is not from somewhere else.
I get what you're saying. Okay.
Unlike what happened earlier with She-Ra, He-Man, and all that stuff.
Gotcha.
So, I like this overall. I think it's a really good episode. It's nice seeing Sunder again. I almost wish they would have changed his name once he became a farmer, because it just doesn't sound right.
Or gone by like his first name or something? Joe Sunder.
I don't know. But no, I like this. I enjoyed it. I thought it was interesting.
Hey, obviously, when we saw Sunder for the first time, it was back-to-back with us seeing a couple other, like, Horde members that were off on some remote island or area of Etheria. And when we saw it originally, I even mentioned that this is a cool character. I wish we would get to see more of him, even though we're probably not going to. And here we go. We get to see him again. So obviously I'm a fan of returning to the cooler side characters that they bring up throughout the series. So I like the plot. I'm on board. This is one that would have me excited from the get-go and hopefully would not let me down as we get through it. So I am 100% for revisiting the characters that are not Rebels or not Horde members, technically, that not main ones, not main cast members that we got to see before. I like it.
Yep, so, absolutely.
All right, let's take a break, make our way back to Whispering Woods to see if Mike loses his mind like he did about this point with last episode and changes his rating, or if he'll stick with his guns on this one.
Shut up.
She-Ra, evil one.
Rat her. I knew she'd show up sooner or later. Well, we'll take care of her right now. Robots, aim all freeze rays at She-Ra. I want her captured.
Master, there she is. She's behind those bushes.
If She-Ra thinks those bushes will protect her from my freeze cannons, she's going to be very surprised. Robots, open fire.
Good thing they fell for that old trick. But now they're right where I want them. In a nice straight line. Sword to bow. Bow, I need a steel arrow.
Hey, who's over there? There she is.
One armor-piercing arrow coming up.
Fire.
showing those robots. Blast! She's destroyed my tanks! Get us out of here, Mantenna!
All right, back in the Whispering Woods, where we'd like to be from time to time. What did you like about this General Sunder movie, the return movie, episode, the return of the General?
We're saying it there. I thought you were going to make a Jedi joke.
That's where my head was apparently going subconsciously. When I hear return of, it's obviously either Return of the Jedi or Return of the King or something. That's movies.
There is only one return, and that's of the Jedi, not of the King.
Return of the King is a great movie.
I'm quoting Clerks 2, damn it. Okay, so Return of General Sunder, I really liked it. I thought it was interesting seeing his life after the Horde. I remember when we first saw him at the end of his original introduction episode that he was going to join the Rebellion, and I figured he would have been some sort of, not necessarily an everyday Rebellion member like Bo is and Glimmer is and all that, but we would see him a little bit more than what we have. Like, you know, we would see him on some sort of level as something like a Seahawk kind of thing, because we've seen Seahawk God knows how many times. Of course, Sunder is not, you know, trying to boink the hell out of Adora and She-Ra, right. So there's that. But it's just one of those things where I figured, oh, this is going to be a new edition and we're going to see him go on missions with them, and sadly that's not the case. I don't have a problem with it that that's not the case, but it's interesting to see his new life. I like the fact of how they keep saying that Hordak's going to keep doing the same thing over and over and over again with the, you know, by air. Mm-hmm. And of course, at the time of we're recording this, by the time you guys hear this, it'll be a few months ago that this happened, but I had just seen the Animaniacs. I'm watching Animaniacs on Netflix, and I had just seen the Paul Revere's ride episode with the candle, the little candle character that ends up in all the historical places and stuff. And all as I can think of in this episode when they mention, you know, how Hordak will attack, all I can think of is one if by land, two if by sea, one if by air, two if by ground. You know, it's just, it's all you think of is a Paul Revere thing, which is kind of sad when you think about it. Yeah, no, overall, I really enjoyed this one. I enjoyed it so much I kind of just sat here and watched it and really didn't write anything down, because it was just, I don't know, it was just so interesting that, you know, it's one of those, and I know I say this all the time and I don't mean it negatively, and most people know that by now, this is a standard story. This reminds me of Mel Gibson and Heath Ledger in The Patriot, where Mel Gibson's character was done with the war, done with fighting, and he had to return to save his family. And that's a plot we've seen in Hollywood.
Yeah, it's something that we've...
I'm not saying it's a bad thing. I'm saying that
saying is, yeah, it's something we've seen before, but not that frequently as far as when it comes to cartoons or action cartoons, that type of stuff. It's something that's more usually for that big screen or something that you can have this overarching like storyline with it. Almost... I mean, there's quite a few character movies that have done it, but I haven't seen it too much in the cartoon, so it didn't really bother me as something that was overdone.
Oh, no, not at all. It was more refreshing than anything else.
And, even though I wanted to see General Sunder over and over and over again, or not over, I shouldn't say that. I wanted to see him pop up from time to time. I never really expected him to be on, like, regular missions or whatever, but I am surprised that he chose the life of a farmer versus, like, maybe being in charge of some outpost or, you know, being in charge of something. He's a general, so it's kind of odd that he would choose that lifestyle, but maybe he just needed a complete break, I guess. I like that we see General Sunder again. And honestly, this episode may have more moments of drama than any other episode we've seen in the series.
Yeah.
When he returns home, not knowing what's happened to his wife and child, they play that up pretty well from the dramatic standpoint.
Oh, yeah.
They have an awesome effect on the sunlight as he's, like, getting back home and looking around and that type of stuff. And it was like, it was almost like a scene in, what was it, Gladiator? Is it Gladiator where he returns home and his family's been killed?
I don't know. I've never seen Gladiator.
Okay. So. I might be getting that confused with another movie, but I'm pretty sure it's
the only one I can think of. And you should appreciate this is when the turtles return home. And Raph, we see the camera pan around Raph as he's circling, and he says, Splinter! Yeah.
Well, since we already made a Star Wars reference, it's almost like when Luke goes back to where his aunt and uncle are, Beru and Lars, and finds out that they've already been killed. So I got a lot of drama out of that moment, which I was impressed, because you don't get a lot of drama out of an 80s cartoon show.
No.
And there's also actually good action. There's an actual battle going on.
Yep.
And Hordak's ships look awesome.
They do.
So not only do you get drama, but you get action. I like that. And have we ever seen She-Ra without the mask?
Can we just enter the fright zone now?
No, I loved seeing She-Ra with no mask. I thought it was awesome.
Well, this is the first time that we... I like the look of it, but the logistics of it is where I have a problem.
I was just shocked, I guess, is why I liked it, because I was like, wait a second.
Yeah, exactly.
But I'm like you. I didn't write a ton of stuff down on this one because I think I was just enjoying the action, the drama, the character of General Sunder and what was going on. So I didn't take a lot of notes. But as far as Fright Zone goes, what do you have?
The only thing I wrote down, wouldn't everyone guess that She-Ra and Adora are the same damn person when they see her without her crowny thing?
Like, when Clark Kent doesn't have his glasses on.
Hordak has seen Adora. Hordak has seen She-Ra. If she pops the little crown or the little headdress or whatever the hell it is off her face, and it's Adora, essentially it's Adora cosplaying as She-Ra.
Well, if they can't figure it out just based on the fact that they look alike, we got to suspend some things here. It's like Clark Kent and Superman.
Yeah, essentially it is. Glasses. Headdress, no headdress.
I only have
one only negative thing I had.
I only have one as well, and that is I am maybe somewhat confused on the timeline of General Sunder, because in my mind, yes, we've gone from season one to season two, so I could buy if he had a wife now and the wife was pregnant or there was a newborn child. How has he had time to meet somebody, marry them, and that kid is how old? That kid's not a baby.
No, she's, I'd say, somewhere between 4 and 6, maybe?
So are we supposed to believe that, like, 5 or 6 years have gone by now?
Potentially.
Well,
I don't...
General Sunder, during the Horde, did he have a mistress, you know, did he have, like, a midnight romp with somebody that... You know what? It's not played up like that. It's played up like he decided to be a farmer, met this lady, now they have a family. But I think they kind of screwed up the timeline a little bit. That baby should be a newborn.
Yeah. Who wrote this one again?
Bob Forward. But, I mean, it's a very minute nitpick. But it was something that I thought of because I was trying to place, like, General Sunder when we saw him last to General Sunder now. Also trying to decide how much time has passed between season one and season two.
Yeah.
It was kind of a little wonky on that as well. So... Yeah. That's all I had for that one, though. It's just a minor nitpick. So we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, more awards, more ratings. Let's see if we can agree for once.
Never.
We've just had a message from Hordak. He says he has imprisoned the captured villagers at the Fright Zone. He says if we resist his invasion, we will never see them again.
That's horrible. Oh, Mother, what are we going to do?
You cannot give in to Hordak's threats. He'll enslave everyone unless you resist.
That's easy for you to say. You're free. But one of those prisoners is my cousin.
Sunder's wife and daughter are also prisoners, Guardsmen.
Oh, sorry.
We have no choice. We'll have to split up. Queen Angela, your Guardsmen and my rebels will stay here to fight Hordak's attack. Meanwhile, I'll contact She-Ra. She'll go to the Fright Zone and rescue the prisoners.
No. I was a Horde commander. I know the Fright Zone better than Hordak himself. I'll go after the prisoners. Besides, She-Ra's powers will be needed to fight off Hordak's attack.
But how will you get to the Fright Zone?
Queen Angela has a Horde sky cycle that she captured from a trooper. I think I can still remember how to fly one. By the way, Hordak will be attacking from the air.
How do you know that?
It worked when he attacked the villages, so he'll do it again. Hordak's very predictable that way.
Do you think he's right? I served under Sunder when I was in the Horde. I've never known him to be wrong. Hordak will be attacking from the air. Come on, everyone. We'll give him a warm welcome.
Another chance for Mike to give out some horn bats and protection swords. What do you got?
I'm going to give a protection sword to Sunder. I'm going to give a protection sword to, actually, to the whole family. Him, his wife, and his child, because the family, like, the little girl, she reminds me of, and I know people are going to kill me for saying this, because I know everyone in the whole friggin' world hates this movie. She reminds me of very young Kaylee looking up to her dad in Quest for Camelot before her dad goes off to help King Arthur in the old Warner Brothers animated Quest for Camelot. The little girl reminds me of when Kaylee was young in the beginning of that movie. So, and the kid wasn't annoying. She was basically looking up to her dad. She wanted her dad to be her hero. And, you know, I like the fact that Lou Scheimer and his team finally actually have a child in this Filmation MOTU universe that isn't the biggest douchebag in the world.
Yeah, but it does take them having it be like the side supporting character in order to do that. They can't do it when it's a main character, it seems like.
Yeah, it's true. So yes, protection swords for all three of them. Protection sword for She-Ra, just because it's She-Ra.
just because it's She-Ra, no reason.
Just because. Alright. I'm going to kind of break the mold here. I'm going to give a protection sword for Hordak, because he did not at all use a trap door for Mantana. And maybe that's because Mantana was doing nothing but kissing his ass the whole episode. Like, Mantana didn't do anything stupid the entire episode. And the whole episode, he was just, yes, Master Hordak, yes, I agree with you, Master. It was like he was his yes man. It was like he was the Daniel Bryan of Masters of the Universe. So, I give a protection sword to Hordak, and I give one to Mantana, too. What the hell?
Jesus. Mike, early in season two, running out of hardware.
Oh, shut up.
I've just got two to give out. I will give a protection sword to General Sunder, Farmer Sunder, whatever the fuck you want to call him.
Yeah.
He gets a protection sword. And then I'm also going to give one to Bob Forward. Yeah, he might have messed up the timeline a little bit, but I think the way that he was able to write in the drama as well as the action and bring back a character from before and have the knowledge to pick him out, I commend him, even if it wasn't his idea, because we'll never know. As far as episode rating, 1.5 from you?
Nope.
Oh, thank God.
What do you want to know what this one gets?
Yes.
Because I enjoyed it so much, it gets a 4 to 5. The only reason why it does not get a 5 is because of the stupid crown thing. Like, I like the look of her not having it, but just the logistics of them seeing her without it is just, so I'll take 1 point off for that.
I stopped paying attention to that type of stuff. If they're not figuring out that she's She-Ra just on itself, I'm not going to, I can't criticize it because of that. So I'm going to give it a 5 out of 5. I enjoyed this episode. I enjoyed the last episode. I love how season 2 is starting. So we're going to take a quick break, see if we can end on a positive note or a negative note when we come out of our cocoons.
Who knows?
Having a bit of patience. Patience? Adora, those worms can ruin my plants.
They won't ruin your plants, and they're not worms. But you'll have to wait a while to find out what they really are.
I just don't understand.
Trust me, and wait.
Mm-hmm.
come many miles. From the lowlands of Sand Valley, there has been no rain for many months.
I'm Adora. Is there anything I can do to help you?
Our crops have died, and Baron Condor's soldiers have taken our food. People are starving.
We have food here for you. We've got to get some food to the people in Sand Valley. Quickly, have all of our available supplies loaded into wagons. Bo, please see that these people are given food and shelter.
Right.
Last up today is episode 68, Out of the Cocoon. Airdate Saturday, September 27th, 1986. Written by Don Heckman. Villagers from the lowlands of Sand Valley ask the rebels for help after Baron Condor has taken all their food. She-Ra walks into Condor's trap, but finds help from a young cleaning girl known as the Small One. Mike, we have Princess Adora, She-Ra, Glimmer, Bo, Lucky, Lighthope, Swiftwind.
No, Lucky is not. You cannot count him as a character in the episode.
He has voice lines in the episode, so I have to count him. Lighthope, Swiftwind, Snout Spout, and
yep.
A new character, as well as Baron Condor, Small One, some Prince Norb guy, and some villagers, etc. So, what do you think about the whole idea of the Sand Valley Lowlands, She-Ra being captured, Baron Condor taking everybody's food, and all of this revolving around the origin story of yet another new Season 2 character?
I like it, because at first I wasn't sure I was going to like it, and I figured where it was going to go by the title, Out of the Cocoon. It's a caterpillar caterpillar butterfly. I almost said gutterfly. I don't even know what the hell a gutterfly is.
It's not a good fly. You don't want to be friends with it.
Yeah, it's a bowling ball that transforms. At first I thought I wasn't gonna like it because Glimmer essentially turns into an emo bow bitch. I just don't want these things around my... Shut up.
And learn what a worm is compared to a caterpillar.
Yeah. I don't know. I like it overall. I thought it was an interesting episode. I like the introduction of Flutterina. I'm trying to remember the... What I liked about it is how the transformation happens with the whole sunbeam thing. But again, this is one of those episodes, and I'm not trying to get into Fright Zone here too early, but this is one of those episodes where I was saying a second ago, or a little while ago, when we were talking about the using an episode to introduce a new character, where they have someone that essentially has no ties to the Horde whatsoever. He's a villain because... Just because, I mean, yeah, he wanted crops and whatever else, but he also wanted to stray. Essentially, this is a King Arthur kind of story with the little prince there, and I don't know. I enjoyed it, but at the same time, it just felt average.
What about it felt average to you?
The plot of, not Flutterina. Flutterina was great. The whole Small One, Flutterina, just... The plot of the episode of the prince and the evil dude, whatever the hell his name was, just going back and forth over crops and food.
Well, I mean, I think it fits the time period they're depicting and what was important to people at that point, especially when you have this whole rebellion and this evil empire type thing going on, that it's not like you can just go to the store and get your own food and whatnot. So, I mean, I think it fits the time period. And I guess, you know, you have to have something... to support this other story. I don't know how they would have done it without having this side story involved. So, mm-hmm. You know, I'd have to think about a way that they could come up to do that. But I like the idea that aside, because I really could care less about the prince and Baron Condor. I wasn't concerned about that at all. I was mainly just watching the whole idea of Flutterina, and I was not expecting that girl to turn into Flutterina. So that kind of shocked me. I was... Like you, I was thinking this is, you know, a little bit above average episode, and then that all happened, and I was like, Jesus, we actually not only get introduced to a character, we literally see their origin on screen. It's not a flashback to their origin. We are literally witnessing the origin. So that I'm all about. So before I get too much into my Whispering Woods moments, let's take a break and actually get there, as well as the Fright Zone, to see what we didn't like about this Cocoon story.
All right, Swifty, lift! Again, Swifty, you can do it!
Go, Swift Wind!
All right, we are at Whispering Woods for the final time today. I'll let you go first because I have quite a few. What did you like about Out of the Cocoon?
I like the introduction of Flutterina and how it was, you know, essentially centered around her. I wasn't sure how that was going to play out. I kind of thought I knew after she got hit with the sunbeam, with the mop. And all that.
I was not expecting it. I guess I wasn't thinking about it.
Well, I mean, like, I didn't expect her to become, like, because, like we've said, we grew up watching this, but we haven't watched this in 30 years or 32 years or however the hell long, you know. But I'm saying I was not expecting her to turn into Flutterina, but I was expecting something to happen to her once I saw her use her mop and interfere with the sunbeam, and the sunbeam essentially affects her,
right,
and puts her in the cocoon of sleep or whatever you want, and then we get to see Light Hope and the Crystal Castle and all that, and I like that part, obviously. And I like how She-Ra, like, we've seen her use her healing powers before. I like that she can't. That she has to go to Light Hope to find out what the hell is wrong with her. I think that's really cool, because as many times as we've seen her use her healing powers, it's always nice and refreshing to see that she can't always solve every single problem.
Yeah. I agree. Anything else?
All right.
It might have been weird, but I ended up, as I thought about it, liking it more. That basically Adora realizes that she needs to go to She-Ra, and then they cut to a completely different scene, and then they cut back straight into the transformation. That it was jarring a little bit, but I was like, well, that's kind of a different way to do it, I guess. So it was something I don't think I've seen before, where it's like I'm about to turn into She-Ra, we go to something completely different. And then we go to her turning into She-Ra. So, I don't know. I thought that was unique, at least. She has a decent line. Maybe you'd like a fruit snack. I don't know. All I could think about was being younger and having fruit snacks.
there was a. Want to hear a funny story about fruit snacks?
What? No, I don't.
Okay. So, I was at. The sad thing is this happened to me as an adult, folks, so I know this is completely sad and just horribly, horribly
never
wrong.
Too old for fruit snacks.
And yes, I understand that, but I thought that my mom and I were in, I don't know, it was a dollar store or some random store, and I thought it was a toy aisle item. It was Super Mario Brothers, and it was the old, like, Super Mario Brothers Super Show animated characters on the box, and I thought it was, you know, collectible figurines or something like that, and I should have known better. It took me 2 years to realize, because I just liked the box, honestly, and the thing was like $1 or $2. It wasn't like it was super expensive. Right. And I just had the box on my shelf for about 2 years. When I'm finally cleaning out my apartment to move after my mom passed away, I look at the box and I actually read it. Super Mario Brothers Fruit Snacks. And I'm like, yeah, whatever. Goodbye.
Should have ate them. Interesting cliffhanger on this one with it going to commercial right after the small one gets hurt. Because I was totally not expecting her to be hurt, because it's like, oh, someone's helping She-Ra and now she's the one on the ground unconscious. So that was kind of interesting. And then, like I said, getting to see Flutterina as the actual origin story here, not just a flashback. And she may be my favorite of the new characters yet. You know, I said how Pika Blue was better than Perfuma and probably even better than Mermista. Right. I think Flutterina is better in all of them.
Yeah.
So I like the voice, the just a regular voice, not trying to do some stupid accent or this, that, and the other. And I liked Flutterina in action as well. She did more than some of those other girls have done. For once, I didn't mind, even though it's bizarre, but we got a new one, Sword to Digger.
Oh, that was horrible.
I didn't mind it. I thought it was funny.
That was horrible.
But that's all I have. But overall, I like this episode way more than I was expecting to. What about Frieza moments? Anything for you?
Sword to Digger. I can't not put it in a fright zone because I'm so, like, okay, I thought she was going to pull some, like, we've talked about for the last almost 5 years, you know, next year will be 5 years since we started this podcast. 4.5, 5 years, we've talked about He-Man and She-Ra doing weird things with water and weather and fire and brimstone and all this. But Sword to Digger? She couldn't have said sword to shovel or something. Like, I mean, is there anything the sword of protection cannot turn into?
Yes.
I mean, I don't know. Just thought that was...
I liked it. My only thing was you brought all this food to these villagers, or you know, you're trying to feed everybody, blah, blah, blah. And then the first sign of a stress, you're now throwing the food at the bad guys. Like, you know, let's protect the stuff that you just brought for these poor people.
Well, it was only a couple of things. It wasn't like the whole basket.
Yeah, true. All right. Let's take a quick break. When we come back, last chance to give out horde bats and protection swords.
Hey, boo-boo. I need a picnic basket.
Thank you. Thank you. This food will save our people. Leave it here. We will give it to everyone who's hungry.
No thanks are needed. I'm happy to help anyone in need. But some of your people don't seem to have missed many meals lately.
Oh, well, of course, some show their hunger more than others.
I think I'd like to take a small tour of your castle before I leave all the food and supplies here.
It's no good. She'll find out that we want the food just for ourselves. Let's grab her.
Aha! More well-fed people. But maybe you'd like a fruit snack.
Oh, fools, get up!
That looks dangerous. Better cover it up.
Blast! The sun ray, get her with it!
All right, one last chance to give out some hardware. I have one of each. I have a protection sword for Flutterina, of course. Liked her as a character. Want to see some more of her. And a horde bat for Glimmer for being a douche. I mean, do I need to explain why she gets a horde bat? It's fairly obvious when you watch the episode how much of a bad, retarded person she is in this episode. What? What?
She is voiced by Linda, right?
I believe so, if I remember right.
Glimmer turned into Teela this episode.
Glimmer was not good this episode, bottom line.
No. And wasn't this... Yeah, this episode was... I wish I brought this up in my Fright Zone moments. This episode was so screwed up because apparently Glimmer has the power of Superman, except she glows. Like, what the hell? When was she able to fly? I don't ever remember that being a part of her powers, ever. I don't know. Anyway, what are we giving? Horde bats, protection swords?
You can give whatever you want. I give one of each.
I'm going to give about 10 horde bats to Glimmer. Because that whole thing was just... A 2-year-old would not rant and rave about that. A 2-year-old is better behaved than Glimmer in this episode. Hell, Teela in most episodes is better behaved than Glimmer in this episode. So I'm going to give her about 10 horde bats upside the head. For protection swords, I'll give one to She-Ra for helping them solve their problems, but I'm also going to give her a horde bat for Sword to Digger. I'm sorry, that just... These sword changes are just getting worse and worse as we go along. Hey, wait, wasn't there something earlier? Was it this episode or was it the last episode? sword to Bo, and then she calls out to Bo and says, yeah. "I need a titanium arrow, a vibranium arrow, a steel arrow." She said, "Was it that? Was it the, yeah. that, this episode or?"
It was recently.
No, it was this. It had to be this podcast.
The first episode.
Okay.
Yeah, I think it was the first one.
Okay.
What about ratings for this one?
Like I said before, I enjoyed the introduction of Flood Arena, but it still doesn't save it from a 3.5.
3.5. That's better than a 1.5, like you were retardedly saying for the first episode. I give this one a 4.5. It's not quite as good as the last episode. The only reason I didn't give it a little bit higher was because of the side plot between Condor and Prince Norb or whatever it is, Baron Condor. Like, I just focused more on Flood Arena somehow, I guess. I mean, I don't know how else you would have done it, but maybe there was a way to do it, but that's just a minor nitpick. It's still great. I love Flood Arena, so 4.5. I'm liking today. 4, 5, and 4.5. Season 2 can continue just like this. Let's take a quick break. When we come back, give you our final thoughts on how Season 2 begins.
It better get better.
Because the world needs another movie podcast.
The GeekCast Radio Network presents for your listening pleasure, The Cinema Geek.
Hosted by Amanda, Kevin, Matt, and Dan.
Each week we dive headfirst in the landscape of movies as we discuss movie news, play movie games,
go in-depth on reviews,
and even have a top 10 countdown or two.
Also, don't miss our director retrospective series, where we review noted directors' movies film by film.
Bottom line is, if you love movies and love podcasts, you need to experience The Cinema Geeks.
You can find us on iTunes, Blog Talk Radio, or GeekCastRadio.com.
I know what we're doing today.
Okay, Michael, if we're going to tackle this podcast thing, we've got to do something really special. It has to be cool, daily, in audio form, and undetectable by radar. Something that screams summer. I know, let's do a Phineas and Ferb review podcast. We'll call it the Podcast Organization Without a Cool Acronym, or PALCA for short. What do you think?
I think if we're not careful, Candace is going to bust us.
You can find PALCA on the GeekCast Radio Network, iTunes, Blog Talk Radio, and all of the other methods you find podcasts.
Okay, then. Carry on.
Do you like retro cartoons? Then Saturday Morning Rewind is the podcast for you. Join them each month as they talk about classic cartoons and interview legendary voice actors like Jim Cummings.
I am the terror that flaps in the night.
Corey Burton.
Sometimes toys can be so funny.
Rob Paulsen.
Sure, Brain, but how are we going to find chaps our size?
Nancy Cartwright and many more.
Eat my shorts.
So grab a bowl of Lucky Charms.
They're magically delicious.
Put on your hammer pants. Go to SaturdayMorningRewind.com. And be prepared to feel like a kid again. Once again, that's SaturdayMorningRewind.com. Saturday Morning Rewind was voted best podcast ever by its host, Tim Nidell. So it's gotta be good.
All right, folks, we're back here on the Myths of Etheria. Season 2, sir. I know you're loving the start so far, and I'm cautiously optimistic about the continuation of Season 2.
Man, come on. We got Peekaboo already. We got Entrapta.
I said we got cautiously optimistic.
I'm liking it.
Yeah, I said cautiously optimistic. I didn't say cautiously pessimistic about it. I mean, you know, it's kind of like red light, green light. I'm stuck at a yellow light with season two at this point after these first three episodes, because I just don't know what the hell is going to happen, obviously.
I'm just excited that we're getting new characters. I like some of them. I want to see more. Give me more Horde members. I want to see some more Horde members. That's where I'm at right now. I'll, like, you know, keep Flutterina and Peekaboo, but let's see some new bad guys for them. But get this more Entrapta and a couple more bad guys.
Mm-hmm.
That's it for me. I'm happy. Happy with how we started.
So, we've got not a lot of episodes left, folks, of the podcast. Next time around, we've hit 70 episodes in 4.5 years. Next time is episode 70.
I want to see how many times you're going to say 4.5 or 5 years in the rest of the podcast.
Well, by the time 2017 hits, it'll be 5 years.
I know, but I think you've mentioned that in the last 6 episodes.
So episode 70, after that, as of episode 70, we will have 55 podcasts left for the entire series of The Powers of Grayskull. Thank you for joining us. Please go leave feedback on geekcastradio.com, which is all new. Check out our format there. Shoot us an email, feedback@geekcastradio.com. Leave the show's feedback in iTunes. Please do this. You can call the voicemail line, 502-526-5821. Please leave your name and the show you're leaving the message for. There's a 5-minute time limit. We hope you enjoyed the myths today, and don't forget to join us in our next adventure when we will be talking about a lesson in love, something old, something new, something borrowed, something blukey. What the hell that was. And then we also have Lukey's Sweetie as the final episode. Oh, God.
Yeah. Had a girlfriend. No, he was great in his first episode. I'm looking forward to it.
He wasn't even in the first
episode. His first episode that we saw a little while back.
Okay. Okay. For now, I'm TFG and Mike with
the rational and logical Optimus Solo.
Idiotic and moronic Optimus Solo. No. By the power and for the honor of Grayskull, you all have the power.